Dave Meltzer here, and I've got a wild one for you today. My guest is basketball Hall of Famer and arguably one of the most controversial athletes in sports history, the one, the only, Dennis Rodman. You know him for his antics on and off the court, but today we're going to dive deep into his playbook and find more about his personal life a bit and how things changed it, like growing up in the projects, and even how falling asleep in a barber chair changed his life. And most importantly, we're going to find out how Dennis Rodman is the most likely man on earth to save it. Stay tuned for all of that and more here on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer, CEO of Sports One Marketing, here on Entrepreneurs The Playbook. And I have an NBA superstar, champion, but I know you're going to be so humble now. My old buddy from Fashion Island in Newport Beach, but Dennis Rodman, welcome to the podcast.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Now I'm going to start, I'm a perspective guy, so things happen in everyone's life. For me, I lost a shitload of money, and that changed my perspective in life. And I had to figure out, was it luck or was it technique? And I actually reinvented myself and ended up making more money. But for you, you had an interesting true perspective change that when you were 20 years old, you were 5 feet 11, and your perspective truly changed because all of a sudden you were, what, 6'8"?
I was like 6'8". You know, this call came all of a sudden, you know. Living in the projects, it's kind of difficult to process how's your life going to end up is, you know, because you don't have too many avenues to venture out to try to do cool things in the world. So basically, when you live in the projects or the ghetto, that's all you know. Yeah. You know, you don't pretty much go out to Rome and say, I'm going over to the west side of Dallas and say, okay, hang out with, you know, with the white people and try to live life, you know, shit. But, you know, over in the projects, it's a different thing, man. When you grow up like that, you get to see a lot of real life and real, like, interesting things in your life that really changes it.
Yeah, no doubt. And have you always been you, or were you ever, like, were you ever a guy that can, like, I was a pleaser when I was young, and I had to learn to find my frequency to be myself. I was always trying to please everyone. Have you always been just, I'm Dennis?
No, that's actually changed in 1993, you know, when I got traded to San Antonio. Of all teams, San Antonio, really? The Bible Belt country,
that's right?
I'm like, wow, really? And I get traded down there, and all of a sudden, I woke up one morning in a hotel, and I went to the mall, me and my girlfriend. I said, wow, you know, I should get my hair cut or something like that. Anyway, I walk over there, you know, salon. He said, let me come in and do something to your hair. I said, okay, great. Man, I'm bored. So I go in there. About 45 minutes into the chair, I was wondering why it was taking so long to cut my hair. My hair was only that long. And he said, I'm going to do something different to your hair. I said, all right, great, cool. So I went to sleep. And all of a sudden, 45 minutes later, so I woke up. I said, oh, shit. I said, God, wait a minute. Hold on. I just want a haircut. He said, no, I thought I'd try something different. So he cut my hair into a mohawk, and it's blonde. I'm like, oh, man. You know, I didn't expect that, right, all things. And that evening, and my girl was like, oh, man, I love it. That's cool. So we walked through the mall. The next thing she knows, she wanted to go to a movie. So a couple hours later, we go to the movies, and we went to go. I said, any movie is good. So we got two tickets. We went to the theater. And as we walk in, the movie was called Demolition Man. And 5 minutes into the movie, I always sit down and say, oh, my God, that's Wesley Snipes with blonde hair, but a mohawk. I'm like, oh, shit. And I said, wow, man, this is a coincidence. So we left the movies. The next day follows, we had Fan Appreciation Day in San Antonio. It was like 15,000, 16,000 people at the Alamo Dome.
Yeah.
And everybody's doing it, you know, that ritual, you know, I'm holding it down, praise me, God, and stuff like that. So I'm like this outcast coming in, you know, all of a sudden. I said, no matter what happens, what we do this year or next year or whatever, I'm going to be Dennis Rodman, I'm gonna be a bad boy, so take this. So I took my hat off, and people flipped out. And said, oh, my God, he got blonde hair. And all the players, like, looking at me like the devil. And so it's like, okay, God, you know, I said, whatever, you like me or hate me, so this is what it was. And my life actually changed that day. That day, from that point on, I became the new Dennis Rodman. I was pretty much like you, like a caregiver. I just give, you know. So then after that, it was just pretty much Dennis Rodman, the wild boy, the bad boy, the wild child, you know, soul survivor and stuff like that. Yeah. So I just ran to my own beat.
That's awesome. And now, you know, through the ups and downs, and, you know, everyone has them, you know, what is it that keeps you, you know, you have reinvented yourself. You've hit highs and lows.
A lot of shit.
Exactly, which is awesome. But, right? You know, for me, like when I lost everything, I had, you know, three beautiful daughters, a wife, huge home in Rancho Santa Fe. You know where that is. And I woke up and, you know, I literally was to the point where I was like, God, if I can look up, I can get up. Because I screwed up massively, right? Hanging out with the wrong people, doing the wrong things. Because I was retired in my 30s and that time got to me, and the, you know, and I sat there. I go, how did I had a lot of money. I had a golf course, a ski mountain. I lost a lot of money, and I'm sitting there going, what? But what kept me going was I went back to childhood, because I grew up a single mom, six kids, and I decided, you know what, I'm just going to live my life by what I learned, right? Just straight character stuff, gratitude. I'm going to be grateful for everything I have that's important, instead of following all this false shit that I was working so hard for, being accountable for it. I stopped blaming everybody else that I lost my money and just said, I'm the one that did it. And then I got inspired every day. What turned every time for you? Like, what is it that motivates you again to say, I'm just going to make this happen again? Because you do such a good job at it.
Don't believe it. I don't try. Believe me. No, it's just like, you know, 93, I really didn't have that much money at the time. That's when John Lucas came and got me. I was in Vegas, man. So probably down on my last dime. And John Lucas said, hey, man, we've been looking for you for the last week. I heard you've been hanging in Vegas. I said, yeah. So we went to San Diego. We had a meeting. He said, how about you want to play for San Antonio? I said, all right, great, cool. I come play. So down went to San Antonio. And it was really something weird, man. It was just so different than Detroit, you know.
Right.
San Antonio, Detroit, you know, Detroit's more like the hardworking man, you know, and just do the dirty work and go home, eat and get back up to work again. But in San Antonio, it's more like, you know, you have to live by the Bible.
Right.
And everyone's like, you know, so religious and in the same sense, they're so country too. And they live right there on the border. You know, so it's like it's a lot of ups and downs down in San Antonio, but it's more structured for people to get their minds right, get their lives together. So basically, I went down there pretty much to get my life together. But as for sports, yes,
yeah,
that helped me out a lot. But as far as the lifestyle, I got it been with a little buy-in because people couldn't accept me being a basketball player, and it's more like an entertainer off the court.
Right, right.
So I started wearing like women's clothes, you know, like bras, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything. I started wearing everything. So dressed the drag queens and stuff like that. So I dressed up makeup, and they was like, whoa, wait a minute, da-da-da. We can't have that here. And I remember I was changing my hair so much, and we go on a plane, go to a away game. I'll sit here, Dave Robertson sit here, and Dave Robertson just sit there and just look at me, just weird as fuck. You
know, it's like a military conservative, weird as hell,
you know. And I asked him, I said, Dave, why you keep looking at me all the time? He said, I'm just trying to figure you out. And I said, all right, great, cool. But he just thought I was just like this, you know, Lucifer. Amen. Lucifer,
yeah,
exactly. Shit. He thought I was Lucifer. He said, God, man, why do you do this all the time? I said, Dave, I remember a long time ago, you used to fuck a lot of girls in the Navy, in the Army, where the fuck he was at, right?
Right, right, right.
Now, obviously, you just changed your life totally around, huh? You don't like this, you know, damn, I'm, you know, Richard Schwartz or whoever. So I said, okay, great. So I'm like, this, the guy on this side, and everybody's on this side. But he actually praised me a lot because the way I play on the basketball court, that's right, pretty much how we got along. And we always battle each other in practice and push each other. So that's pretty much the reason why I stayed in San Antonio, because they knew I could win. They knew I was very competitive. I was not there for show. I was out there to win. Yeah. So Nothing against San Antonio. Thank you for letting me go. So, thank you for letting me go, David. Yeah. So, Chicago. So, anyway.
Yeah, that's not a bad city.
Not a bad city at all.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it wasn't an easy role.
What about playing in Chicago, you know, playing for the legend himself? Was he the Zen master? He's probably open to you being you, right?
Oh, I mean, he was all about that.
Yeah.
He was all about that. I think the fact that we had, Phil went to Michael and Scott and asked them, should they pick me up, you know, as far as being on the team? And Michael and Scott said, yes.
You want to win.
No, you want to win. But before I had to go to the team, though, I flew in. I went to Jerry Cross's house, Michael, Scotty, Phil, and me. We all just all five of us in his house eating dinner and stuff like that. And Phil's like, you know what? Before you be official on the team, you need to do one thing for me. I said, what? He said, why don't you go there and tell Scotty that you're sorry? I'm like, what? Tell Scotty I'm sorry?
Yeah.
He said, just go over there and say you apologize. I said, all right, whatever. I said, all right, hey, man, you know, sorry about what happened in the Detroit series between us and stuff like that. You know, I just want to play with you guys and win. And Scotty said, it's all good. You're on the team. So basically, I'm on the team. So I was strangely interested about that he asked me to go do that.
Yeah.
Before I even joined the Bulls. I think for foremost that for the camaraderie for the team. So we can get on a good foot instead of a bad foot first. So that kind of helped us to do the 7-2-10 year.
And all three of you guys were so competitive.
Every practice, man. Yeah. Every practice.
That's what made you the best team ever.
Every practice. I mean, Scotty would call Michael every day in practice, man. I probably don't see that too much these days. Not at all.
How does Kerr fit into those three? Because he's like... he would fit in San Antonio, wouldn't you?
Actually, for Steve Kerr, you know, we did get in fights in practice.
Yeah.
You know, Michael and Cool Coast, Michael and Steve Kerr, Jeb Bushlin, Mike. I mean, we did get in fights in practice, but it's more like, you know, a competitive fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
like brothers.
Pretty much like brothers. So,
yeah.
But it was a good mix for me in Chicago because that's probably what I needed to get myself over the hump.
Well, I do a lot for charity, and I'll tell you, if I could get you guys to have a dinner again, I could raise $1 million to have dinner.
Quick.
Imagine having dinner with that group, Phil Jackson, Scotty, Michael, and Dennis.
Oh, dude,
people with millions of dollars they'd pay.
That would never happen. I don't think
if you can make it happen, I'm going to get 20% to you, and we'll get the rest to charity.
Always thinking about money, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It's entrepreneur. This is entrepreneur.
Always thinking about money here.
Sorry, no, that's my nickname, Money Money.
What?
Yeah, so now I'm going to go, you were talking about the military and Dave Robinson. Just a quick question out of my curiosity, because you've been to North Korea. I did a lot. I worked for Samsung. We had the first convergence device, which was a CE device. But I've been in South Korea a ton, 2.5 years, back and forth. What's North Korea like? Is it something, you know, because I believe in communication, and people like you can help, I think, put rest assured that, hey, these are regular people that are in a different environment, or is it something, you know, that's completely out of our mind?
Well, it's weird how I became a friend of the marshal in North Korea, because he actually asked Michael first.
Well, he's a Bulls fan, of course.
Yeah, he was a Bulls fan. I mean, he still is a Bulls fan. He's a Bulls fan.
We should send him a bunch of Bulls stuff to make sure he keeps us safe.
He loves basketball, though. So Michael said no, and he came down the list and said, how about Dennis? So they asked me to go. I said, okay, I'll go. Before I went, I said, do you realize where you're going? I said, I'm going to North Korea. What's up? You know, I'm thinking we're just going to do an appearance, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay.
I'm going to do an appearance, like, you know, like a paid appearance as usual. He said, no, do you realize where you're going? I said, I'm going to North Korea. So what's the problem? He said, you know that we have differences between America and North Korea. That they want to bomb us. They want to kill us and stuff like that. I said, that's not my problem.
You know, right. That's not my fucking problem. So let's actually do it. Then it becomes a problem.
That's not my problem, right? So I go over there. It was like, man, God over there. Like Jesus just walked in the building.
Really?
And the people just, you know, all the leaders all on the tarmac, you know, come off the plane. Like, whoa. I'm like, damn, this is like really serious shit. So I walk off the plane. You know, everybody's shaking my hand. Oh my God, we're happy here. Okay, great. So we go inside, sit down, just sit around like 100 people around like a big square. And you got all these dignitaries. I mean, everybody, and I'm dressed like this shit, you know.
That's awesome.
Like we're going out to a fucking club, right? So it's like, all right, great. So they don't speak English. You know, I had two interpreters with me. So they just like, you know, they just smiling and doing all that bowing, and, you know, and it's like, you know, welcome to North Korea. Okay, great. So, da, da, da. So I was just kicks and giggles and stuff like that. So we go see the countryside. We go see all this. And they said, well, you're going to see the marshal, the leader of North Korea. I said, okay, cool.
It's like
a regular person, right? Yeah, I said, yeah. I agree. You know, so we go to the...
Let's be fair. You've had dinner with Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen, and Michael Jordan. Who cares about the marshal of North Korea? Let's take a vote. Who wants to have dinner with those guys or the marshal of North Korea? I'm on the long list. Exactly.
So I just went over there, you know, went to the hotel. So we went to the hotel upstairs in the room. It's like 50 people in the up there for dinner. It's like a big square thing. Everybody's, how they do, you know, dignitary shit. And it's just food everywhere. There's food. I mean, goddamn. Next thing you know, he walks in. He's about yay tall, right? He walks in, and everybody stands up. Like 15, 20 minutes, they just sit there clapping the whole time, right? It's like, damn. And I'm sitting down. They said, you need to get up. I said, for what? So he's asked the marshal, like, all right, I get up. So I get up, I say, great. So he comes and he goes to sit on the other side with his chairs and whatever, with the phones right in front of him and stuff like this. So I'm like drinking, and he asked one of his guys, he said, well, have him come over and sit beside me. I'm like, okay. So I go over there, I walk all the way around, go sit right beside him. And he said,
"Pat him on his head."
Okay. Not like that. But we just sit there. You know, I sit there beside him. The next thing you know, he said, "You don't have to get up. Don't worry about it." But his people told me that because he speak English. He don't have to get up. Just sit there. He said, "You want Coke? Coca-Cola?" Yeah. So he gave me a case of Coke right there on the ground and on a bucket of ice. So I'm just sitting there drinking Coke the whole time. And and for some reason, he just came attached to me because he seemed like I was so genuine.
Yeah,
I wasn't like over there trying to impress anybody, trying to talk about war or stuff like that. We just talk about basketball. But ever since that time, I think that even today, I think Vogue went last week, and they want me to go over there so bad they keep asking me every week to come back over. But since Trump got this ban that you can't go over, but we're trying to get a special permit to go over there now.
Yeah.
So hopefully we're trying to get that probably like
your friend, two most powerful guys maybe in the whole world, right? Trump, you're an apprentice. Right. And him, you got some power. Last question. When it's all said and done, right, you've lived this extraordinary life, and I believe people that aren't ordinary are extraordinary. And that's the way I look at you and I admire it. You know, what legacy, if any, that you'd like to leave when it's all over?
I thought about that. I thought about that the other day. I said, wow, what would I said, I would be infamous like most people that's been infamous that died, you know. You know, you can say people in music, you know, you can say Jim Morrison died at 27. You can say Jimi Hendrix died at 27. Janis Joplin died at 27. A lot of people that's been so influenced as far as life is concerned has died at probably less than 30 years old.
Yeah.
And most of the people that's... over 50 that's died, probably in presidents or something that's more like in the political era. But for me, I think it's be more like, it's like more of a chameleon type of life. You know, I played basketball. I was homeless. I wrote books. I did movies. I did this. Now I went from sports to trying to save the world. So trying to save the world for all people on a planet. Dennis Robinson trying to save the world, trying to stop Guam, go over to Guam, go over to Tokyo, go over to Beijing, go over to Shanghai, go over here, this and that. And I think my legacy would be more like, you know, that people would enjoy the fact that I didn't care what people said about me, but I actually care about what people think about me.
That's indifference.
That's a difference right there, you know. Yeah. So, you know, life today is moving so fast, you know that. I mean, everything is just way too fast. If you blink, something's going on. Yeah. So for me, I just think that I've lived a life of a rally. I've lived a life of sadness, madness, and craziness. And for some reason, like all of us, you know, we've been through trial and tribulation. We've seen to persevere and make things stronger and better for people.
That's awesome legacy, and you're doing a great job at it. I so much appreciate your time and your openness, too, man.
You all right.
One of the best interviews. This Dave Meltzer with Dennis Rodman here on Entrepreneur the Playbook, and I'm serious about that dinner. Let's make it happen.
That's all about it. Okay, that's good. That's
for charity.
For charity, man, always.
Be sure to tune in next Tuesday when we feature another story on how a sports icon went from the playing field to the boardroom.